is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Yeah, a little bit different voice here. Jason Caldwell, Bill's on his way. I think he's actually on the phone. Traffic in this town can be a little dicey at times. So I think we got Bill, and I'm here holding down the fort, but ready to roll here on this Wednesday.
Jason, I'm glad you're there. I was ready to do the intro here on the phone. Yeah, I tell you what, the traffic. I thought I had things figured out, but obviously took the wrong way. And that's just a word to the wise for everybody. When you have to be at a certain place at a certain time, you may want to leave a little bit earlier. I was thinking, you know, here on a Wednesday, maybe it's not going to be maybe not as crazy. And I avoided the school traffic, but my goodness, it is really something trying to navigate around the city. As we get more and more folks here in town, it's great to have. I mean, it is really booming. But what's turned out to be a pretty nice day. It was sort of gray and cloudy and felt like it might rain a little bit early.
I was on campus earlier and I had a little bit of a drizzle on me at times. And I was over there. I went by baseball, and before they started, there was a little bit of drizzle. But the sun came out, got a little bit warmer, and turned into a really nice day.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah, I got a little of the same. I had to run somewhere around midday. I guess, yeah, it was around 12:30 or so, and I thought, oh, we're going to get a good bit of rain. And all it did was enough to sort of smear the dust and everything that's on the car. But, yeah, it's turned out to be a nice day. Not a bad day for baseball. But I'll tell you what, while we're talking about it, it seems like we always put baseball on the back burner, and it's like as we're running out of time. But, I mean, it really seems like it's been a productive fall thus far, and they're getting close to winding things down here for the fall.
Yeah, they are. Actually got a couple of weeks because they started later. They're going to play some squad. They're going to play some squad games this week and then play the first of three Orange and Blue World Series games next week, where the players picking the teams, making the decisions, hey, who pitches when, all that stuff. And then the coaches are going to watch that, and then they will do three more the following week as they finish up. So three player, three coaches, squad actually playing squad game today. And so, but it's been really good fall, I think. The hardest part, I think, in a fall for Butch Thompson and the staff is figuring out your pitchers, because you're trying to get so many people involved that it's only an inning here, maybe an inning or two here. You don't get to see, hey, what's this guy look like the second time through a lineup, because you just have to have so many arms. And so you get a much better feel for position players than you do pitching. I think that's why these next 2.5 weeks will be really important for them, as they maybe go a little bit deeper with some of the guys they might expect to be maybe more important parts of this pitching staff.
Yeah, and it's also been an opportunity for more of the young hitters, I think, to get involved. I mean, because you hadn't had Coop and Cade out there for the most of the fall. So it's been an opportunity, and it sounds like some of the young guys have really stepped up swinging the bat.
They have, and I think Kay Ballou, for the first time today, he took some BP while I was there, was going to play this afternoon in a squad game for the first time. So that's really good news.
Good.
They're going to put him back at center field, and so getting him back out there was important. But, yeah, they've been good. Obviously, Chris Rembert and Bub Terrell has been good. You think about those two guys. And then, Chase Frelick is a freshman that was a really good tennis player that's now came in as a catcher, but first base, third base, and kind of seeing kind of how he does has been some of that part of his game too. But one of the guys that's been really good is not a freshman, but he's a guy we didn't see much of last year, Eric Guevara. He had the knee injury in fall.
Right.
Came back and kind of wearing a brace and got to see a little bit. He's been really good this fall. A guy that's at third base, and I think has probably started to kind of solidify things at that corner of the infield for Auburn. So that's been important for him and for this roster. So when you start talking about, you know, kind of those young guys, they've been good. And then the transfers have been good. Eric Snow is at second base, has been good, has done some really good things and kind of filling that role. So he's been important. And then you start to look at some of the other ones. When you start to talk about transfers, obviously the mound got a lot of talk, but they've been, you know, some of those transfer position players have been really important too as you start to kind of figure out this one. And even a guy, a second-year transfer, Derek Fabian, I think his shortstop has done some good things. So they have they put together some pieces. It always comes back to what does that maybe your first couple of starters look like? Can Cade Fisher be that guy? Will one of your freshmen step in there? I just wrote about one of their best freshmen, a guy who's been really good, and so you start to talk about some of those pieces in place. I wrote about Christian Chatterton last week, and then Jackson Sanders from Valley. I just wrote about today. Mm-hmm. Those two young guys, Connor Gatwood, 97, 98 miles an hour, pieces for sure. Now, kind of, how do you start to fit those together? That's kind of the next goal between now and February.
Yeah, that's good. So, still opportunities for folks to be able to get out there. And saw some of your story about the locker room. We were talking about that the other day. I mean, it really everything is really impressive. I can't wait to see what things look like inside.
Yeah, no, it's I've gotten a little bit of a feel for the stadium itself, and it has a minor league ballpark feel now. When you start to talk about the suites down the right field mm-hmm. line,
oh, yeah.
the enclosure, I think it's going to add. And it's something to think about. It's like the people that are going to be most thankful are going to be maybe the folks down the left field line and the left fielder, because all of a sudden that sun's going to go down.
Little shade.
The sun's going to go down a little earlier than it has in the past because of that extra overhang. And so, it looks good. They're finishing up work. The coaches' offices are now kind of – that's the next step. They have to move out of their offices, and so they're moving. For folks who don't know, the baseball team's been dressing in the old mm-hmm. athletics complex, the old football locker room. Well, now they're in their new locker room, so that's cleared out. So they're going to move Doc Goodlett and the doctors and training staff and all those folks in that old locker room space and kind of redo that. So the baseball coaches can move upstairs to the second level of their building, and they'll have a full weight room on the bottom floor. It's going to be really nice, but the baseball coaches in the meantime are going to be kind of without a home, probably close to getting close to the first pitch in February. I mean, it's
wow.
going to take a few months for those things to get done, but I think it's going to work out well for them down the line. But, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a nomadic feel for the coaches here in the next few months.
All right. And things sound a little different. I'm in the studio now. So, thanks, Jason. Dan will be in just a little bit. He was over in Opelika getting his voting, getting his absentee, because he's going to be out of town. He's with Troy women's basketball all next week, so he had to go ahead and get his absentee stuff
okay.
done today. And that, he said, was taking a lot longer than he thought.
I'm sure.
Everything today seems to be, but he'll be in a little while. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio, along with Bill. We'd love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. You can text us on the Drive text box, and that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And the text box number is 334-564-1840. We're just getting underway. I tell you what, since we'll go ahead and get to an early break, and then we'll get caught back up, because there is a lot to talk about. Auburn, you know, back in the win column in football, basketball about to get started as well. We'd love for you to join in as we get to our first break here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, we've about got the gang all here now. Dan has made it in. Jason just got us going. He actually brought us on the air. I was on the phone, but Jason went ahead and brought us in. I was like around the corner by that time. Dan doing his civic duty, going ahead and getting set up for getting his absentee.
No, I went ahead and I just dropped the thing off. Yeah. It's busy. It's busy down there.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I'll tell you what.
People might need to know.
Traffic from Opelika to Auburn and around is crazy.
I think some of the information online tells you that if you're going to handle your absentee, and I think you have until tomorrow to get your absentee application in. If you're doing it in Opelika, if you're going to drop it off by hand, it's not at the courthouse. It's at the – I think online it tells you to go to the courthouse. They have some signs posted. They're doing it at the meeting center that used to be the furniture store next to Swiss Cleaners. Mm-hmm. So go right by Railroad is the road right there, 10th Street, but go to the meeting center on 10th Street. If you're handling your absentee stuff in person over the next couple of days, I think you have until tomorrow. If you're not gonna be able to vote on election day, you have until tomorrow to get your application in, and they have applications there.
Good.
So you can go and you can fill it out and get everything handled, but you have until, end of business tomorrow to do that.
All right, so Dan is here. So it's Bill and Dan and Jason with Drew at the controls here on this Wednesday. And as we get to football, Jason, you were telling me something I had not had a chance to see because I was stuck in traffic.
Yep.
But, I mean, football news as Antonio Kite no longer a Tiger.
Yeah, he's been dismissed from the team, violation of team rules today. And quite honestly, he hasn't been in the playing rotation the last 3 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. Kinsley Faustin had kind of jumped in there and taken that role. We've seen J.C. Hart before that. And so now you look and start think, you know, kind of, I mean, it's the thinnest position on this team. And you think about what you thought this roster was going to look like at corner maybe in January.
Wow.
And what it looks like now. And it's very different. But I think now you'll see Amon Lane probably jump in and maybe start to get a little bit of a run. We'll see if Keontae Scott slides back outside and gets maybe at least a look. He did a little bit in practice out there.
I was going to say, that's probably why you saw him.
Yeah, I think
at corner.
Yeah,
in practice.
I think this has kind of been. This is not a hey, boom, something. One thing happened.
No.
Antonio Kite's no longer with us. I think this has been. Hey, there's some reasoning why we've seen a lot of things happen behind the scenes, and I think it was like okay, but that's enough.
Now that he's been dismissed, and this is still speculation, but do you have any reason to think that may have played a role in his disappearance from the field earlier this season, or could that have been his performance could have played a role?
I don't know which one led to which one,
right.
But it's obvious there was a little bit of both. And I think maybe his performance suffered because of things that were off the field and then vice versa. But I don't think there's any question that it's all connected. You don't make mistakes and – well, I mean, again, there's certain things you have to do to continue playing. And, I mean, just we can point to the NFL if you want to. When a quarterback takes himself out of the game because he's tired, then all of a sudden people go, hey, why are you giving up on the guy?
But if that quarterback were completing 70% of his passes for a team that was winning every game, it would be a little different.
But to me, this goes back to
something we talked about. And we were the only ones, seemingly, that were like, even though people are telling him he's a first-round pick, and even if though there's a team that's going to do it, didn't it feel like Anthony Richardson needed another year of college football as a quarterback?
Correct.
And to give everyone a more complete picture? And instead, because what you're doing now in the NFL is you're hoping you can – like, I know there are the Aaron Rodgerses and the Jordan Loves who get some time on the bench – but generally speaking now, if you're taking a guy in the top 10, you expect to win with him in the first couple years. It's not we're going to spend 3 years making him someone who belongs on an NFL field. It's you're going to try to win football games with him immediately. Like, I mean, look around. Look at some of the rookies this year.
Yeah.
Like a Jaden Daniels or who exhausted.
I mean, again, but it's Caleb Williams.
Yes.
But it's the difference between taking guys who played a ton of football and taking guys who are like, hey, that guy's really athletic. Let's take him.
Right.
Well, we had this discussion at lunch, and I know we can get back to Auburn, but like I was like, there's a reason why that position. I guarantee you, bust rate for first rounders higher at quarterback than anywhere else. Same thing for five stars.
How about especially quarterbacks who haven't played X number of games?
Yeah, I mean,
I think
even that. I mean, you could get you just don't know, and you go, I feel good. I mean, first round Major League Baseball draft choices. Like the best part, this is so hard because it's a different world.
The best part is the notion, and we can't get back to Auburn. I find this interesting with you, Jason. Like, I mean, there's talk that they're not giving up on Anthony Richardson, right? That it's like, oh, this is a pause. They're just gonna.
You're not walking back in the locker room after you take yourself out. You're just not going to. I mean, like it.
And the bigger problem is that, and Kirk Herbstreit actually said something like this during a preseason game, calling. I mean, the clip has resurfaced, but all season long, people have wondered, what do you do if Joe Flacco is the guy who gives this team the best chance to win right now?
Yeah.
But Anthony Richardson is the guy you took with a top five pick in 2023, and you have a lot of draft capital invested in him getting better, and the only way he's going to get better is by playing. But and the point that we talked about it when people talked about Peyton Thorne. Here's a pivot back to Auburn. Do you stand to lose credibility in the locker room if you play a quarterback who doesn't give you the best chance to win in the eyes of the other players?
Correct. And I think that's hard. And so you start looking at all those things. Yeah, you're right. And so, yeah, it's tough. But sorry, I took us off a derail to say a little bit. But no, when kind of getting back,
I've been meaning to talk Anthony Richardson. Yeah, I'm glad you gave us
getting back to Antonio Kite. You look at it at Auburn now, and you go, it's already a very young position. If you have a few injuries, you would have gotten back to Antonio Kite because he wasn't that far down the depth chart because there's just not many guys left.
Right.
But still, you start to look now and go, hey, you just cross your fingers and say, hey, hope you stay healthy, because it doesn't impact you right now in your game plan. But it could impact you if you have a couple of guys.
Yeah, very
you
well.
You start good. To go down and you go, where do you get to at corner? And it'll be walk-on territory, maybe – I don't know what – I mean, that's all you'll have left. Maybe a Sylvester Smith can get a little – maybe time. He's a guy that could probably play corner, had played some in his background. There'll be some things you have to do now.
You feel like they might go back to Keontae before it's
– I mean, I think you start to go – if you get a couple of injuries, then you're going to be – that's going to be your fourth guy.
I know Coach Freeze said – I forget which press conference it was. It might have been postgame where it's like – Keontae, like he indicated that health played a role in the decision to go with other defensive backs.
It was Monday, but he's still returning punts.
He's still your punt returner.
Yeah, correct.
Which, I mean, he's still the ankle feels good enough to do that, which makes me want I don't know.
There can be situations where backpedaling is a whole lot more trouble than
catching and running a punt. Yeah. But he said it was more of Wednesday, Thursday, the preparation involved, and you feel good on Saturday, and you go, hey, you can still return punts. That. You're just catching the ball and
there's nothing special. I mean, the ball's in the air. And you're catching, you return.
Well, I mean, occasionally you got to backpedal and stuff after the catch.
I think even if you felt good Saturday,
it's not being out there game planning for the receivers getting, and the routes.
Correct.
Right. And the part that's more puzzling is that if he's healthy enough to be the punt returner, but it's I got the sense that it wasn't just health with Keontae earlier in the season. Like it felt like he was, but he's been battling stuff.
Well, he had a hamstring too, early. He hasn't played very well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it opened up the door for other guys. There's no question about that. Health or no health, I think there's other guys now that have moved in front of him.
And then Jake Crawford, the National Freshman of the Week. I mean, he's a guy that's really taken advantage, really stepped it up.
And he's not a small corner. And so I think you start to look, and McKay and Lee had – a great play on that fourth down play against Kentucky. You don't see many guys undercut those kind of routes. And so those guys are playing well. Kinsley Faustin's playing solid. I thought those guys did a good job. And so you start to look at now for J.C. This is going to be big for J.C. Hart. J.C. Hart is maybe the most physically gifted of that group, but just doesn't have a ton of experience. And so this is going to be more opportunities for J.C. Hart. And maybe you don't have – maybe this week isn't as much because, I mean, Vanderbilt, I don't know if they're going to challenge you a ton down the field.
Not usually.
This is going to be a, hey, short route, glue to your man, scramble situation.
They do a lot of quick stuff.
They do. And so this is going to be tackling, getting guys on the ground. Important week for those young guys because it'll be a different type of offense than they've really seen. A little bit against Arkansas, a little bit against Oklahoma that you'd seen. But, Kentucky last week, honestly – I still to this day don't understand why they yanked their starting quarterback and went to a guy who was pretty much run only.
I kept waiting to hear that there was an injury at some point.
Because, I don't know, and so
after a series or two, it was obvious He ain't going to get
it. No.
The question I would have is, and they kept showing the, was he a Boise State quarterback about a decade ago? The former Kentucky coordinator. They kept cutting to him.
Played for Harsin, I believe.
Yeah. And so, you know, I would hope maybe Kentucky would offer an explanation as to why Wimsett, if it's completely a, we can't protect Brock Vandegrift, and so we're going to go to a quarterback that we think can run a little bit more against these pass rushers.
And Brock Vandegrift is pretty athletic, though. They just did not run him. And it was almost like, well, we're going to change our plan, and here's what we're going to do. And then they said, well, we got to throw it a little bit. And
it felt like watching Auburn's offense last year, Jason.
It felt more like watching Auburn's offense
at the beginning of, like, when they were trying to decide between Thorne and Ashford at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, a little bit like that, even a little bit like when Sean White was injured, and you're like, this guy can play enough, but, well, if we want to try to do this, we better play this guy. And it felt like two different types of offenses.
They did nothing. And, I mean, Auburn, after that rocky start, which, boy, I mean, you had to think, oh, man.
Yeah.
Here we go again. You see them drive drive down the field. Auburn's the first possession offensively and defensively has been a problem for the Tigers this year. And then you're down 10-0 and then throw a pick. And it's like, oh, this looks like it's really about to derail. But from that point on, Auburn absolutely dominated Kentucky.
Yeah, and you know, it starts with, like, I think it's the second straight game and probably the third or fourth time where you've started inside your 10-yard line.
I think it's the third straight. And you've had a penalty on the first kickoff that
just
you got.
And they're like, hey, we're just gonna fair catch it the rest of the time. And I think that's the right move.
I hope so.
And so, I mean, you start at 25, and even if you don't go score, at least you're punting the ball to the other 20 instead of out of your own
right.
end zone.
Right, you've got a chance to keep the field position even.
And going into it, you kind of understand a little bit where Hugh Freeze is coming from, because other than Florida – like, nobody had really run the ball against Kentucky. And so you're like, hey, let's see if we can throw it early to loosen them up, because they're a big, huge group. And then you're backed up. And he said, hey, Peyton Thorne kind of short-armed the first throw to Jarquez Hunter, which should have been a play. And I thought really interesting listening to the diagnosis of the interception. It was late, and so you probably should not have thrown the ball anyway.
Right.
But you also had two guys that could have helped their quarterback out that didn't. So it was it wasn't just a, hey, he threw that ball late and it got intercepted. But yeah, the response, quite honestly, was the best part of the game. That was the most important part of the game. You're down 10-0. Keldrick Falk's sack may have been the most important play in that entire game.
Yeah, took him out of. Yeah.
You're 10-0. If they get a first down, you may go down 17-0 in it. 10-0, you're like, okay, you're still there. Thought that sack, making them punt, and then you get some things going offensively. And then you could see, too, this offensive line grouping. It's the first time where you felt like, okay, you feel like there's something you can hang your hat on. Because, I mean, you haven't had that, because this is your best offensive line group in terms of run blocking, and it showed up Saturday. You haven't had this group together other than a little bit of Missouri. But you weren't planning that game. Mm-hmm. This one you planned, going, hey, look, this is the group you've got. And I thought they made some really good adjustments, but they ran the football. The interesting thing to me was that, you know, the other running backs ran it some too, but Jarquez was way beyond those guys in terms of production.
Although I thought the Damari runs early helped get the run game going. But it was the Jarquez show after that on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was so patient in finding the hole and doing those things. I thought it was one of the better running back games I can remember. And obviously the numbers are there too, but that's not a group that has just said, hey, we're going to give up a bunch of rushing yards. And they just flat out dominated them. And then, you know, defensively, other than you kind of get put in a bad position early, and then that last gasp drive for them where it took just a fluttering throw over Sylvester Smith's head to keep it going. That was that.
The things that came up were, you know, you think about stuff previous coaches have told us, you know, here at Auburn, where Gus would talk about a power running team proving it's a power running team on third and fourth down and in the red zone. Auburn had not been a good red zone running team going into that game against Kentucky. I don't know how often they ran it actually in the red zone, because they were busting out plays from further back. But I mean, they were. You know, they were imposing their will in a way that they had not done in the first couple of games. And it does sort of make you wonder, like if Auburn had, I don't know how much of it was a strategic shift and how much of it was you know, decided on the field by the guys, but if Auburn had decided we're going to try to lean on teams and gradually break them to where 4-yard runs are going to become 8-yard runs in the second half, and they're going to have to, you know, have that long conversation with themselves about whether or not they still want to do this. Like, could that have worked against Oklahoma? Or you didn't have leads against Arkansas or Cal, which doesn't necessarily mean that you should have abandoned the run.
But absolutely look at the Oklahoma and the Missouri games.
Yeah, and you look, well, we look at Missouri. I mean, Jarquez ran it 4 more times Saturday than he did.
Right.
He had 19 carries against Missouri. It's not like they didn't run it. They just, it wasn't as good. He had 19 mm-hmm. carries for 57 yards.
Yeah, and it may not
23
have been,
for 278.
And the guys they had in there may not have clicked as well as this bunch. Brayden Joyner is, I mean, he's a,
And
Dylan, mini road grader.
And Dylan Wade is another interior offensive lineman playing left mm-hmm. tackle. And so you've got, I think, a much better run group there.
And the Arkansas game also, I mean, you were breaking in a new quarterback and thinking, okay, they're going to play run first.
And you're down.
You're down early, but it's also thinking like we can't be run first against, you know, with starting a quarterback for the first time where Arkansas will you know, just, you know, be 9 and 10 in the box all game long. Having said that, looking back on the Arkansas game and thinking, I mean, yeah, Auburn threw it 35 times and the running backs touched it 16 or 17 in that game. It's like it was all, I mean, it's you know, something has clearly shifted as far as, you know, how they want to attack teams from what they were trying against Cal and Arkansas and what you've seen against Missouri and Kentucky. And I think it's probably, and I don't know if there's a world of difference quality-wise, right, Jason, between the two teams Auburn saw to begin conference play, Cal and Arkansas, and the two teams they played pretty recently, but I think Auburn has decided they're going to attack in a different way over these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like I said, I think some of it is part of that where you start going, how are you adjusting? What are you doing?
Is some of it what can Auburn protect? Like what is it? Where do you feel
I think that's some of it.
You know, where do you feel like you can give Thorne an opportunity?
Yeah, I think that's some of it, and yeah, you start to. Yeah, you know, you look at, you know, thinking back to the Arkansas game, and you go, man, the turnovers, and you kind of try to get back in it in the third quarter, but you're down 17-7 to start of the fourth quarter, and you look at a lot of the pass attempts come when you're trying to kind of get back in the game. So that's been part of it. The Oklahoma's the only other game they've had where they've had 70-plus plays. So they haven't had, hey, let's go grind it out. I thought there were a couple of huge third down conversions in that game, one Peyton Thorne ran it, the other one he threw to Camden Brown that allowed you to continue to run the football. Those are things that you have to have too. You have to be able to go, hey, it's 3rd and 4. Let's go convert a first down and then you can, hey, then you got a chance to run the ball 2 or 3 more times and maybe break one. That's been as big an issue as anything, is that whether it was turning it over early. I mean, a lot of those were first down. You have a tip ball on a first down interceptions, whatever. So you're taking away 2 or 3 possessions a game where you could have maybe had the ball 2 or 3 times in Jarquez Hunter's hands. You look up and you're down 10. You go, well, now we got to go throw it a little bit. And so it's been a little bit of everything, I think, impact. But I felt like for the first time they were able to go, okay, here's our group. This feels good. And you start having some success running the football, and you're like, okay, this is where we are.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here with Bill and Dan in the studio. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. John, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
At the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, 24 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, and let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I hadn't had a chance to listen the past couple of days this week, but I was happy to see Auburn get a win over the weekend. That was a pleasant surprise, and like I said, goes to show good things happen when you open up the running game. Quarterback doesn't have to be as fearful of left tackle collapsing and getting killed. So I'd like to see some more of that this upcoming week. And so is somebody drinking in Vegas to make Auburn a 6.5-point favorite over Vandy?
No,
I don't know. John.
I think there's skepticism on, a Vanderbilt team that's played this many close games against seemingly tougher opposition, and you haven't seen a team that runs the ball the way Auburn did against Kentucky. You haven't seen a team attack Vanderbilt that way these last couple of weeks. So I think Vanderbilt being, I mean, you can argue, should it be 3 or should it be 6 or 7 or whatever, but I think Vanderbilt being the underdog going on the road to Auburn makes sense.
Is Pavia injured or C4? No,
he got banged up, but I would imagine, you know, he is tough. That is one tough dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
I imagine you won't be able to tell it this
week.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you look at Vandy, you go, man, yeah, they've beaten Alabama. They had a chance to beat Texas, and you start to look at it and go, okay, they haven't gone out and run away and hidden from anybody. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they won a bunch of close games, and that's what they do. But Auburn's been in a bunch of close games too, so I would expect a close game, and you could see a touchdown either way, and it kind of holds up.
And they, you know, they were very competitive. Should have beaten Missouri at Columbia, and then they beat Kentucky. But they, you know, Auburn's played those teams just as well as Vandy has, and so this ball game is at Auburn. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the score in Vandy. It was kind of one of those Auburn games. If they hadn't turned the ball over so many times, they would have beaten Texas. I think Vandy turned the ball over 3 times against Texas. But
Texas turned it over the first possession and gave them a 30-yard short field,
that's
too.
Right.
So, yes.
That's right. Vandy is very good. I mean, they're taking advantage. On the season, mm-hmm. their turnover ratio is very good.
I have a question for anybody on the panel. I heard something on the radio the other day that were saying that the I-85 was going to be closed down to one lane starting at some point. Do y'all have any information on that?
I think it's already happened. I think it's northbound now. And then I'll look and see if I can find it exactly. But I think it was northbound for a couple of maybe mm-hmm. a week and a half, and then they're going to switch and do southbound. So it must be where that bridge work's being done around Shorter, I believe.
So that maybe they'll have that done before football Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I don't know. I tell you what, be careful around Auburn. I mean,
these the Pike Road construction you're talking about?
Yeah.
And there is some road work being done in Auburn this week. So it's going to take you a little longer to get around town once you're here.
All right, this is an 11:30 kickoff.
11:47. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely, John. Yeah, I know there's some folks going, how can this be? Because of Vandy's win over Alabama and how close they played Texas. Vandy is a team. Look, they're really playing well as a team. But as far as, I mean, top to bottom talent, they're still not there. They're much better than they have been, but they're not there. Near the top of the conference, and Auburn has shown that when they don't beat themselves, yeah, they've got more than a chance against everybody, especially at home.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, say like Kentucky, and you go, yeah, that was an opportunity, and you look, and Vanderbilt won that game with 288 yards of total offense. Mm-hmm. Kentucky had more yards,
and Auburn had 500 against Kentucky
and turned it over one time. Kentucky had 23 first downs against Vanderbilt. And so you go, like, I mean, like, it's they're playing well. They're veteran. They're hard to beat, but they're not a team. Like I said, if you give them a bunch of turnovers, they can go and do that. But they've won games by going out and just being tough and physical, and I would expect to see that Saturday. But you're playing at home. It's not a bad matchup for Auburn, but you got to be able to get quarterback on the ground.
334-321-1390.
You got the info that that was requested there for the bridge work, not oral bridge work. This is
Don't even talk about stuff.
Sorry,
like that.
Sorry about that. But all right, started Wednesday the 23rd as part of it's planned lane closure on I-85 North. One lane is closed about 2 miles north of exit 16, and that will be they cut it to one lane around the clock. Until they're done with the work. When they're done with the work, they're going to switch to a southbound lane and do the same thing. Delays are expected. Consider using alternate routes. Again, that's right around that's just north of exit 16, the Pike Road exit.
And it, so it says around the clock?
I-85, around the clock, one lane closure. They're going to move to the southbound lane when they're done with the north one. The contractor aims to finish both directions by Thanksgiving. There's an incentive from the ALDOT for early completion. So they're going to try to get that work, but probably not by Saturday.
No.
So if you're driving up from Montgomery and you're going to go through Pike Road, be aware it could be congested on I-85 north.
Yeah, you got to come about 5 a.m.
Little past Pike Road. Or go, you got a couple highway options.
You can take 14.
You got a couple highway options there. You can go around it. Just be aware.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the drive hotline. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill.
Sorry about that, Brett. We had to go to the traffic chopper. You know, we had to.
That's all right. Hey, I'm all for it. I actually just went around all that. I go to middle lane exit.
Yep.
Go down to the turnaround, hit 80, and come on up. Get back on it shorter. But I'm not sure if you'll be able to do that on game day because traffic will probably be a little too bad going up 80. But anyway, hey, a lot of people, you know, obviously, Hunter was the big factor. It doesn't take anyone a whole lot of thinking to figure that one out. But I believe that where they decided to throw down and outs to Cam Coleman, like they did the first two games, pretty much opened things up. Because it's a lot better to start, you know, with a 4 or 5 yard gain than it is getting sacked or 1 yard gain or something like that.
Yeah, I think quick game was helpful. That, like I said, Camden Brown had a couple of plays. We saw a quick one to KLS out there, and he turned and made a guy miss and got a gain out of it.
The first down sacks have been a bigger issue even than turnovers.
Yeah,
since they went back to Thorne.
Yeah.
Since they went back to Thorne after the middle of the Arkansas game, feels like going backwards on first down.
I think that's when you would think you take your shot place because it's first down and they haven't been able to protect because teams are run blitzing, and I think. That's part of the – when we were talking about Dan, you were talking about earlier about facing some of these teams earlier, especially when you had, you know, Hank Brown in there. Teams are going, hey, look, first down, we're going to force you to throw it because we're going to come after you. And I think, hey, those short throws may be the answer to some of those things. You're right.
Yeah, I got a feeling after 4 to Cam Coleman the other night that if they come out and do one on the first one, it'd be a good time for him to do a stop and go then and then hit a big one.
And that's the thing. Can you protect it enough to kind of give you a chance for that route to develop? That's been some of the issue for them too.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I didn't think we'd get beat that bad last night, but hey.
Well,
you know,
I mean, if you're from the Dodger perspective, let them have all the runs they want in one ball game. I'm still very skeptical, even though Cole's going tonight for the Yankees.
Cole's going tonight. I still, you know, my point of view on this was, I give me one in Dodger Stadium and one in Yankee Stadium and get the series back to L.A.
And you've already had the bonus of two in Dodger Stadium.
That's right. And so, and I, you know, you don't necessarily want to go back to Dodger Stadium having lost two games in a row because then Game 6 becomes enormous.
Oh yeah,
but. You got a chance tonight.
Will Freddie hit a homer in his seventh consecutive?
Is Flaherty going
game?
Tonight?
Yes, he is.
Jack Flaherty tonight. Yeah. Yama game six.
Yamamoto.
Yeah.
And then Buehler would be seven.
Uh huh.
Well, I tell you what, the two that Buehler's thrown, I'm pretty confident.
Last two have looked like vintage. Walker Buehler.
Yeah, maybe there's something about the cold weather that gets, you know, maybe stick him in a meat locker on Saturday before he pitches in L.A.
Yeah, you know, Dan, I hate to bring this up on this channel, but I've been getting a lot of ribbon over the years about how the Dodgers, you know, they choke in the series from some of my friends who are pulled for that team, you know, about 2 hours north of us. Northeast, and I'd like to point out if the Dodgers win this, it'll be 2 in 5 years, and the Braves have won 2 since Moses walked the face of the earth. So, y'all have a great day.
All right, Brett, he's got a point. 334-321-1394. We get to our final break. Jason wanted you to talk about the announcement today from Auburn Athletics. Jared Binko becomes the latest. group, AD from smaller school to move up to the Power Four as a deputy AD. I think that's a really, really good looking hire for Auburn.
Yeah, this is all in preparation for what's to come. For what's to come in terms of potential revenue sharing, all the things that are going to be added to the plate in an athletic department. Jared Binko's a guy that's been at Auburn before. Wife was here at Auburn, so they have some connections there. But this is
– I don't think I mentioned Georgia Southern's AD.
Yes, Georgia Southern. Hey, Chris Davis hired as Georgia Southern's AD,
yeah,
so that's
that?
Awesome.
That's,
so I've got to give
no
him
– surprise.
But, this is in preparation for what's to come. Jared Binko's a guy that is a financial guy, a fundraising guy. All those things become even more important now when you think about what's to come in terms of
– with the revenue share.
Yeah, and full scholarships and the NIL part of it. I mean, there's going to be a whole lot to figure out in the coming years.
He was Cohen's deputy AD, one of Cohen's deputies at Mississippi State before leaving. That's what he was doing before he got the Georgia Southern job. I do wonder if this is a sign of – you know, call it brain drain or call it sort of like resources exiting the mid-major levels
when possible
to make the jump to.
Oh, yeah. It's
I think it's a sign of uncertainty for the next 10 years or so.
There's
of
no question about it.
What, you know, if you're not in the SEC or the ACC or the Big Ten.
Yeah. How does it impact small? Like I said, this is not the first one. It won't be the last one. So I think it's part of that going, I don't know what it's going to look like at these places. And so I think that's part of it. So, yes.
Just the thought of, like, head coaches leaving to become coordinators and athletic directors.
We've seen that, too.
Kane Womack is in the state. I mean,
we have seen those things happen before. Yeah, I mean, I think there is plenty of questions to be had for schools of that size. So, yes, but I think really, really good hire. And, again, it shows you the direction things are going at places like this. But, hey, before break – Auburn golf team just won the East Lake Cup.
Yeah.
So they beat Georgia Tech, win the most prestigious tournament here in the fall. So that's huge news for Nick Kleinert and that group as they go out and win another one.
Outstanding. And congratulations to them. We'll get to our final break of hour number one, our final segment with Jason. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Hey, Lee County. Chris Patton here to
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. JC, Auburn basketball. Ready for its they have their second exhibition Friday. Tomorrow night, the Auburn women play. So basketball season here. Auburn won their first exhibition by 21, even though they didn't shoot it very well.
Yeah, no, these exhibitions are really interesting because you're trying to work on things. You're working on rotations and some of that. And so that's part of it. I think you look at this team and go, how well they're going to shoot. I think Miles Kelly getting back will be really important for this team because I think Denver, along with Denver, he's your best shooter outside. Right. And so I think that could be a big deal for them. But a good opportunity. I mean, Florida Atlantic is not going to be Florida Atlantic, you don't think, that went to the Final Four a couple of years.
Not that you would expect because it's a
– You lost your best player.
They're not FAU anymore, right? That's right. You know what
we're
So Andy told us about this yesterday. It's been quiet there, but it's picking up steam. They've rebranded.
They do not want to be called FAU.
They want to be Florida Atlantic.
That's what they want to be called. I'll never forget going to USC. And in their media guide in 2002 was this big, long thing about how not Southern Cal.
We're not Southern Cal. Yep.
We're either Southern California or USC. But we're not Southern Cal.
I experienced this in the Sun Belt a couple of times. App State is very particular about being App State now. They only want you to reference Appalachian State when you also include university and talk about the school. And when they talk about the athletic programs, they want to be App State. ULM only wants to be ULM. They don't want to be Louisiana Monroe. They only want you to mention
Lamo.
They only want reference to Monroe when you're talking about the city. Otherwise, they want you to call them ULM. They don't want to be called Monroe. Louisiana. Only wants to be Louisiana now. They don't want you to mention Lafayette unless you're talking about the city.
I can promise you they're going to be FAU.
I had not heard about this one from Andy yesterday, but yeah, FAU trying to shed the 60 plus years that they were FAU to a lot of people, including the Final Four run.
Yeah, I mean, they have their most famous famous athletic.
You made the Final Four 2 years ago. You're gonna rebrand now.
Change what people call us.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, basketball should be fun, though. I mean, both the men and women should be a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the women's team. Interesting dynamic. A lot bigger. A lot more size. We heard from Johnny Harris earlier this week.
And a real scorer. I mean, Scott is a different kind.
You lose a really good scorer.
You do.
How well can she step into that role? I mean, that's going to be really important.
She was one of the best freshmen in the conference last year. Different style at Arkansas, wide open, but still, like, that's a huge addition.
You know, you got more size, and so you're going, okay, how does that impact things? Obviously, this league, softball is the biggest one when you look at it going, the additions of Oklahoma, Texas. It doesn't get – I mean – That's in a world of its own when you maybe take the best two teams in the country.
They're both Final Four contenders in women's basketball.
And basketball is the same thing. I think Texas is right behind South Carolina in terms of teams in this league. That's you're adding in a potential Final Four team, and Auburn has – I mean, you got to play them. So you start to think about some of those things. And
Reagan Beers, the Oregon State transfer, she's a Player of the Year candidate at Oklahoma.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I mean, so lots of things to look forward to. Women play tomorrow night at 6,
right.
Men Friday night at 7. A couple opportunities to see them.
What are your plans for this week?
I'm going to go to basketball Friday night. This is a kind of a weird week in between high school football and the start of playoffs next week. So going to go to basketball and kind of do them, get some photos, do all that stuff. So be at basketball Friday night, and kind of saves me a little time for that, well, early kickoff, but 11:47, a little bit later. So looking forward to it.
Jason, always great to have you in. We'll look forward to everything you guys are doing.
Yep, sounds good. Appreciate it.
Back with hour number two. Stick with us.
This sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Hope everybody doing well on this Wednesday. I mentioned it earlier. Started out cloudy, overcast. We got a little bit of sprinkle of rain for a little bit, but then the sun came out. Turned out pretty nice.
For the end of October, beginning of November, it's warm but gorgeous, right?
Like, very pleasant.
Yeah, I mean it really is. You know, usually the weather's starting to turn a little bit by now, and you're starting to see a little bit more color on the leaves. But I'd say give it 2-3 weeks, Bill. When I get back from Alaska. Probably it'll be.
You're gonna bring the cold weather
full autumn here in Auburn.
I would think by mid November. I would sure hope that it's a little cooler. I'll tell you what
should be gorgeous tomorrow night.
The leaves are not only changing colors; they are falling like crazy.
Yeah,
man. I went out Friday.
I parked under a tree last night.
Oh wow!
So I goofed. Yeah, I'm covered in.
Well, here's what I did.
I'm gunked
last Friday. I just felt like, man, I've got a couple of weeds here in the yard, but there's some leaves that had fallen. So I took the mower and basically just vacuumed the yard. You know what I mean? I mean, because my next door neighbor's yard on both sides looked really good. They don't have any trees.
Right.
But they looked really good. So I thought, I want mine to look that well. And I did. I cut everything. You know what? By Sunday, you can't see that I have a yard. It's nothing but leaves.
So you're running the mower over the leaves
just to mulch them.
Them.
Do not like raking.
And you give it 2 days and they're covered.
Now my yard is the messiest looking in the neighborhood because I have the big silver maple in the front yard that sheds.
Eventually it'll run out of leaves.
Yeah, eventually it will, and then I'll hire somebody to come rake because, like I said, I do not like raking. But, yeah, it's nice weather. Enjoy it, folks. Looks like it's going to be this way for at least another week. So through the weekend, it's going to be nice. We've got so many things going on with women's basketball tomorrow. And, again, that's on ESPN 106.7. We will be on until 5:45. That's when the pregame starts for Auburn and LaGrange tomorrow night. And – the women's exhibition over at the arena, and We'll turn things over to Britt Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera. And then Friday, Dan, you want to?
We're still working. Okay. We're still working on
possibility
on the logistics
of the show
of
being
Friday.
On location.
Yeah, I don't want to promise anything now, yeah. So we'll save the announcement.
I probably won't be there. I probably won't be there Friday, but there is big exhibition game, the home exhibition game against Florida Atlantic at 7 o'clock on Friday. I believe there's still some tickets available to that, and then Saturday morning, 11:47 kick. That means 8:30 for the Auburn Network, 6:30 for game day on Wings.
The Breakfast Boys.
Yeah, love
when they get to bright and early. Jack and Unc get to start breaking things down.
Oh, yes. Speaking, let's see.
Is that right about Auburn FAU tickets? I'm sorry, Auburn Florida Atlantic tickets still being possibly on the...
That's what I was told today.
How about that? Let me check right now.
Well, I mean, because, it was... It wasn't part of the season ticket package, so pretty much the entire arena or most of the arena was available for folks to buy tickets to.
Be aware, folks, and that is absolutely right. Looking at AuburnTigers.com, there are, in fact, there are tickets for you've got some standing rooms and you got some $25 to $45 public mm-hmm. tickets still available. So if you want to check out the team on, and you're not going to get that many opportunities if you don't
no,
have tickets.
No, you're not. There aren't any. There aren't any opportunities to get a seat right now, to purchase a seat. You can get, I don't even know. I don't even know if there may be some standing room for some pre-conference games. That's it as far as basketball is concerned. So, that's something to keep in mind if you want to see Auburn basketball, get an idea. Still don't know. We'll talk to Bruce tomorrow and find out if Miles Kelly is going to be available on Friday.
Might just be standing room tickets now for FAU. Might be the only ones I'm
Florida sending. Atlantic.
Right. Well, I'm not going to stop. No.
What are they going to do? They're going to take our credentials away when we go there.
No, I mean,
that's
I understand.
They're going to say, just, you can't talk about us anymore.
It's just old habits, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
Like I still say Florida Marlins, you know what I mean? So like, it's probably going to take a while for me to adjust to the Florida Atlantic Owls, but that is the, by the way, Auburn basketball with the FAU logos everywhere for this. they didn't get the memo there at Auburn Tigers.
It's Auburn's home game.
That's right.
That's the way it is.
We'll call
you what we want.
You're absolutely right. And the game benefiting the Melton Scholars Program for Auburn University, designed to help increase access for underrepresented students and support them throughout their Auburn experience. Standing room tickets still available for the game on Friday night.
So that's going on, as we mentioned, the Saturday game. I mentioned it yesterday, and Tex gave me a little update. We mentioned he had something come up where he's not going to be able to go, and he's just looking. Again, he's looking for an Auburn fan or fans to use his two tickets. Now, he's not giving them away, but he's not looking to make anything on them either. As a matter of fact, they are Section 31, and he has these seats have chair backs as well. They come with the chair back seats as well. So if you're looking for a couple of tickets, and these are good tickets on the east side, on the sideline, lower level, then you can contact us. You can give us a call here, and we will get you in touch with Tex. How do you get in touch with us here, you might ask? Well, that's by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcast. Want to mention, again, tomorrow, Bill, Halloween night, Auburn doing the downtown thing.
Absolutely.
6 o'clock.
6 to 8.
6 to 8. Be ready for trick or treaters, I would say, if you're in the area. Skybar costume contest tomorrow night, 8 o'clock when sign up gets started. Costume.
Probably a little young for that.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Although I could use a prop.
Not, I think she may be downtown in her costume tomorrow.
Oh, that's a bummer, because me and Kennedy were gonna do the King Kong and Faye Ray.
Oh.
We were gonna do that. I was gonna hold Kennedy up.
Hold her in your hand.
I was going to hold Kennedy up like King Kong.
Maybe you need to get in touch with Scott. Sarah might be available for that.
All right, I'll check to see what her bedtime is for the costume contest. But
that would be pretty cool.
That'd be a pretty good costume. I got to find a gorilla costume.
He used to always be worried about what he was
doing. I don't want to give away my costume, but I need a gorilla costume and a baby between now and tomorrow night. But Skybar costume contest going on tomorrow night, and you're not going to want to miss that. A Halloween tradition here in the Auburn area. Going to be a blast. Lots of cash prizes available to the winners. So check that thing out tomorrow night if you are looking for something to do on Halloween night.
334-321-1390.
We have someone calling for the tickets.
Oh, okay. Is Mark going to hang on?
No. John's on the phone.
Okay.
Mark's, he gave me his number.
Okay, good. So we have that.
That's all better on mic, Drew.
Yeah.
It's a radio show.
Yeah, that's right.
You can see. You're allowed
to
say those
things. You've got a mic over there, Drew.
You're allowed to say those things.
You can talk. That would be fine. Yeah. Let me remind you before we get to the phones that hour number two of the drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. All right, now let's get to the drive hotline. And was it John? Hey, John.
Hey, sorry to call back, but I just got home and sat down and just saw where one of Auburn's beat reporters is reporting that one of our players is no longer with the team. Y'all discuss that?
Jason mentioned that right when we came on the air. He said it had happened not long before he'd posted the story, I guess sometime around 3:30 or 3:45. Antonio Kite, who was a transfer from Alabama, came in, pretty highly thought of, was thought to be one of Auburn's more talented players there at cornerback.
Scored on the muffed punt against Missouri a couple weeks ago.
Played a good bit early on, but the last few ball games, we haven't seen much of Antonio Kite. And I saw a report, J.G. Tate at AuburnSports.com said that Antonio Kite missed numerous practices.
That is one of the reports going around about his dismissal. But yeah, Antonio Kite looking to be finished with the Auburn football team.
Well, that's discouraging. But when you I don't understand missing practices. If I don't go to work, I get fired. So
yeah, that's pretty much it.
So yeah, I don't know if that's a byproduct of these kids having money that they never had before or what, but I hate to hear that because he has been productive in the past.
He had been. Fortunately for Auburn, I mean, guys like, Jay Crawford has really stepped up and played well. We've seen Kinsley Faustin play a good bit the last couple of weeks.
I mean, you really just have the five scholarship corners and nickels. I mean, Auburn's been playing, I think Auburn's been playing Caleb and Sylvester more at the nickel than they expected to sort of make up for some of this. But yeah, Kay and Lee, Jay Crawford, Kensley, JC, and Amon are the five. And I don't know how much Amon has played so far this season.
He has not.
Yeah, he hasn't played. So you haven't seen JC in a while, and Amon
may see a little more of them. And of course, the folks that watched the few minutes of practice the other day said Keontae Scott back working at corner, so that would make sense.
All right. Like I said, apologize about calling back.
Oh, no problem.
I appreciate it.
So in case you hadn't heard, I was going to mention that too. I mean, that's something that we talked about there in the first hour. Antonio Kite dismissed from the team. And, yeah, it's a shame. Shame for him. Shame for Auburn's depth. Because, I mean, this is a position that this is the third player that Auburn was counting on, from the spring and into the fall, with Tyler Scott suffering the season-ending injury, Colton Hood transferring out, and now Antonio Kite being dismissed. But Auburn's secondary has been pretty good, and they are, again, a pretty young group. I think things look pretty bright for the future, but, boy, Auburn can't afford – to lose another player or two as they come down the stretch.
No, it's critically thin now for Auburn, where you think about, like, I mean, what would you guess the plan is, Bill, for how many snaps Kay and Lee, Jay Crawford, and KLF play on Saturday? I'm thinking it's close to,
I'd say, 90%+.
All of them? Yeah.
I'd say very close. I mean, not if you get a comfortable lead late. Or if you're way behind,
then late. Maybe Amon makes his debut and JC comes back into the picture. Yeah, possibly. But and at safety, you still have Thompson, who plays a lot, and they're willing to go to Caleb Harris, who's played seemingly less and less as the season goes on. But I don't know if they have a safety that would make sense, like moving over to corner, right? Like, I don't know who you would think about like swapping. I think they like all of their safeties as safeties. And yeah, that just really puts pressure on Kayan, Jay, and KLF to stay healthy, because those are three. I mean, you already lost Champ Anthony for the season. You lost Tyler Scott before the season started, and Keontae's been battling injuries all season. I mean, the secondary's doesn't look like it was supposed to look like.
No.
And now it's just, I mean, and you feel great. Look, if you get four games where Kayan, Jay, and KLF stay healthy and productive, you feel really good about your secondary going into next season, right? Like, because those could be three. I mean, we'll see what KLF is, but like those could be three guys that you count on as starters, you know, for an entire offseason. It's just you really and Champ Anthony is presumably coming back, right? Like I would think that there's a role for Champ Anthony in next year's secondary too, Bill. When we talk about, like, when we're trying, I mean, not just the next four games, but like the future for this Auburn, mm-hmm. for that position. Like, I don't know how much Auburn feels like they need to go. If the underclassmen stay, I don't know how much Auburn is going to feel like they need to go into the portal and find a contributor at secondary, because you might have prospective starters at every position among your under.
You might. I mean, with Bug Thompson being a senior. Maybe you'd look at a safety if there's somebody you feel like can come in and be a starter. You're bringing in a couple of really, really talented, you know, high schoolers.
Yep.
But do you want them to start from game one?
Well, I would think Harrison Smith would seemingly have the inside track on safety.
Could be, but
at the
moment.
You're
talking five. You got five positions. You're hoping Champ is good to go coming back at one of those. But I still
could Kayan and Jay as your.
Yeah,
as,
could be.
I mean,
very
I mean,
well.
I mean, I mean, that's and keeping the option open to add to the portal. Add from the portal. The thought of,
I would say, yeah, it's not going to be at the top of your list, but if there's somebody who is a proven commodity that can come right in, it wouldn't hurt.
I like that secondary though. I mean, the thought of Kayan Lee, Jay Crawford, Champ Anthony, and KLF, you know, playing most of the final snaps at those positions, and then yeah, I mean there's young. I mean, we don't talk about Terrence Love all that much. I know he hasn't played a ton this year. But that's another young safety. I know when he's gotten in the game, Hugh Freeze has shouted him out, mm-hmm. and other players have talked about like they have senior safeties. That could be a guy who could contribute more in a pinch.
All right, we'll get to our first break. We've got calls holding. Dak and Cameron, hang on, guys. You'll be up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Brady here with University
of and Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 21 minutes after 5 o'clock, and let's get right back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Dak is up next. Hey, Dak.
Hey guys, good to hear your voice today, man. To address the secondary issues, has anybody talked about Malcolm Simmons playing both DB and receiver?
I have not heard one mention of that. No, that's an interesting thought.
If there's a guy that can do it, he can do it now.
I don't know if they. It's an interesting thought. I had not heard any.
No. I mean, I know they're so excited about him learning more about being a receiver.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying take him away from that side. I say let him play both if he can do it. I mean, I know he was a heck of a DB in high school.
Yeah, I just wonder if that's more taxing than than ever. I mean, it's. I mean, I know Travis Hunter has people believing that like it can be done, but like I just wonder
it
if Travis
can be done in college.
Yeah, but he's a super athlete though. You know, what I mean, it's almost
yeah,
like
he's an athlete.
It's like I mean, he's a number one overall pick kind of like. I mean, it's like
Hunter is. Yeah,
yeah. To me, it's almost like people seeing Ohtani do something. It's like, well, you can pitch and hit in the majors now because
if you're one of the most elite of the elite.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to know how many SEC players, if there is an SEC. Player, you know, putting in real minutes as a two way this season.
I guess what I'm saying is, we get down to such dire need. What's the alternative?
If they got down another one or two, they might. I mean, they've still got Kinsley Fausten, who's been playing. Jason mentioned Amon Lane Gainis. You've got JC. I mean, JC Hart's still learning to play in the secondary. So they've got a few guys, and Keontae Scott is looks like he's working out back at corner now where he'd been
right.
At nickel.
I mean, how many snaps on offense does he get a game?
Malcolm, a dozen, usually.
Yeah. How many?
About a dozen.
About a dozen, maybe. I think it's fluctuating.
So that ain't very much.
No.
So he could do it, but, you know, are they willing to do that is the question, but if we get another one or two hurt, man, we're gonna have to do something drastic. Mm-hmm. Sounds like.
Yeah, it is.
I'd be interested to know if there's interest from Malcolm. He's been exclusively a receiver since coming to Auburn. I'd be interested to know if there's any interest from him in exploring the possibility of being a two way player.
That's a good question.
Because I don't know.
All right, guys.
Interesting, Dak. Had not.
We've seen guys moved from one side to the other. You remember Noah Igbinoghene was a receiver who became a defensive back, mm-hmm. but it wasn't really working out at receiver for him.
No. For Malcolm, that's definitely not the case. But I mean, it might be a situation where, I think it would take probably a couple of more openings.
You'd hate to lose what he gives the offense because he's injured doing something defensively too.
True.
Like, I think that also would be, even though, like you said,
but you'd hate to lose a game because you don't have somebody athletic enough back there in the secondary. 334-321-1390, and Cameron is up next. Hey, Cameron.
Hello, how you doing today?
Doing fine.
Man, that is a tough schedule for that Auburn basketball team this year.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, that's what, you know, it's not like Bruce got forced into it. I mean, he looked at what the committee said last year when Auburn felt they should be a higher seed. Just look across the state at what Alabama's schedule looked like a year ago. And playing those teams, especially playing them away from your home, is going to give you a lot of bonus points when it comes to, you know, postseason.
I mean,
Auburn didn't
play a quad one game in the non-conference slate last year. I think Iowa State, or no, Auburn did not play a quad one game. There was the hope that App State could eventually become one if they played their way up there. There was the belief that USC would be one, but Auburn, you know, the non-conference schedule last year looked better before the season started, mm-hmm. than it ended up becoming in January, because some teams were a little bit down. Notre Dame wasn't at its usual standard. USC underachieved compared to some other Andy Enfield seasons, and so Auburn did not have the boost from a tough non-conference schedule that they thought they would have in the NCAA tournament. And I think Bruce is out to, you know, he's out to prove that this. I mean. He's out to prove that this team can compete with just about anybody in college basketball. He's said that the only way he can get some of these games is agreeing to play them on the road and go to places like Duke in the ACC Challenge and go play. I mean, it's not a road game, but the game against Houston will be in Houston in the NBA arena in that city. So it's I think it's a strategic move, not only to get the best out of his team, but also to improve the tournament position. And I don't think he would have scheduled like this if he didn't think he had a team that can win these games.
Yeah. Who are you most worried about? For me, I think Houston is.
I mean, Duke and Houston are both.
They're the first tough one up.
I mean, Duke and, I mean, yeah, you make sense to worry about Houston first because they're the first really big game on the schedule. But no, I would think that, I would think that maybe, I mean, Duke looks great. Duke beat Arizona State.
Cameron.
Duke beat Arizona State in an exhibition this week by about 60. Mm-hmm. And so you've got really good teams in Maui. I mean, so there and Purdue has been a really tough team in the last couple of seasons. So I mean, they've been the best team in the Big Ten over the last two or three years. And Auburn's going to see them in Birmingham. So yeah, I don't know if it's. I mean, there are multiple options if you wanted to pick a team that you think is the toughest team on Auburn's non-conference schedule. I might buy into the hype and lean towards Duke, but I would certainly listen to an argument for Houston. Appreciate it, Cameron.
That Purdue game. Oh.
What was that?
Yep. Oh, I was saying, why is that Purdue game in Birmingham?
That's just where they agreed to play it. The BJCC.
Well,
it's like
because again, like I was saying, you get more credit for playing away. I mean, I know there are a lot of people, and I understand this. As tough as it is to get a season ticket, if you have a season ticket, it would be great to have a game like that at home. But then for the team, it is better for them as far as postseason seeding to not play it at home. That's why you see a lot of these ball games played close to teams' homes, but not at home. So you get you still get a home advantage. You're going to have more fans than Purdue is going to have in Birmingham, but you don't get it counted against you because it's not being played on your home court.
You also probably don't want to play a game like that on campus when students are gone. Like, I think there's also the thought that when it's, I mean, Christmas
that's
week.
That's true. I mean,
Christmas,
it's going to be a full house, but it still won't be the same type of atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think Christmas week would be an odd time to play like a top 10 versus, two ranked opponents sort of playing each other in a game on campus. That one makes a little bit more sense, taking it to an arena like BJCC. That's going to be, and then a year later, Purdue's going to play Indianapolis. I believe Auburn and Purdue are going to play a year from now in Indianapolis. So it's two sort of metropolitan areas nearby rather than doing them on. I wonder if that were earlier in the season, they might have considered doing them at home. But with the games being scheduled for the holiday season, maybe it makes more sense to do it in a big city nearby.
Yeah. So once again, I mean, Friday night got the exhibition game against Florida Atlantic, and then next Wednesday the season opener against Vermont, and then Houston. I mean, you jump right in with that one. And again, it's not being played. This one isn't being played on their home court either, in Houston. So Houston's going to get credit for playing Auburn at a, quote, neutral site.
Just like Auburn with Purdue and Birmingham.
Yeah.
Like that's probably going to be a pretty partisan Auburn crowd when they play the Boilermakers.
But it stinks. I mean, where the season ticket holders go, well, why don't we get to see that game? Well, that's just sort of the way it is. All right.
Well, you do get to see that game.
Well, you don't get to see it as part of your season ticket, just because it's maybe close to home. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour rate Tiger takes coming up on the other side, so stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
For our weekly segment of Tiger Takes. It's every single week here on ESPN 106.7, and it's brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. Eugene, great to talk to you, and man, it's nice to talk to you after a win.
Yes, sir. It's been, we've been striving for that for a while. We're able to get it, and it's great to be on air after a win.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened on Saturday. You guys took another road trip. This time you were up in Lexington, Kentucky, an interesting stadium and a really cool place there on the road, a night game in the SEC. And man, I mean, everything was against you guys, right? Everything, all signs were pointing to, okay, Auburn, on a four-game losing streak, still trying to figure out how to get a win in the SEC. Everything was going against you guys, and you were able to go in, play really, really well, and come out with a win 24-10.
Yeah, it just seemed like, we started out the game slow defensively. I contribute to that, not getting the running back down on a long run, just trying to, do too much out there. And they went up 10-0, and
I think Coach Durkin did a great job in terms of allowing us to just hone in on what we need to do better, making the defensive adjustments on the sideline, and just understanding that we can stop these guys. And then and it was a great example of us showing our resilience as a defense. And when the interception was thrown, just rallying around the offense and being able to know we had their back. And getting a stop right there was crucial at that point, just letting us know and propelled us that we could stop them at any point. And we went out there and we did that for a majority of the game. And then offense started to click. Just it was a great thing seeing those guys click. And, you know, Jarquez running it so effectively, and the offensive line creating movement off the line of scrimmage just propelled us. And then, you know, just, you know, we were feeding off the offense's energy. And then the defense was out there having fun flying around, making plays. And it ultimately led to us having a successful day on Saturday.
Well, holding a team to just 10 points in the SEC, I don't care what the numbers say for any of the offenses, being able to do that is just so, so special. And not only did you do that, Eugene, you guys did it after the first quarter. They scored those first 10, and then they didn't do anything after that. What were some of those adjustments that you guys were able to make and kind of focus on through the last three quarters on Saturday?
Yeah, so the adjustments were just understanding and not trying to do too much within the system. You know, as a defense player, you can kind of get antsy and you want to do more. You want to go make the play, and myself included. And Coach Durkin was just like, stick to this. Everybody do their 111, and we can win this game, guys. Like, lock in, and we're hurting ourselves after that first drive. So we just honed into everything he was saying. We're playing fundamentally sound football. And then on top of that, there's a piece of playing relentlessly, flying to the football, setting blocks, making tackles in space, just getting the ball carried down, causing havoc on the quarterback. So I think it was a combination of all those things after the success they had early, and then propelled us through the rest of the game.
And it was another game where later on in the evening, right, a second quarterback comes in and threw, I think, 10 passes, did the backup for Kentucky. And you and I have talked about this all season. I mean, you've had so many games this year where the defense has had to prepare or even adjust mid-game for a second quarterback.
Yeah, it's certainly a thing where you have to continue to hone in throughout the week. Two quarterback systems are not like they're not foreign in college football anymore. So just understanding that we will see two quarterbacks, being able to prepare for both different styles. And the other quarterback came in and he was more of a running type quarterback, and we understood that. And you know, everybody having so with having a running quarterback, it would be less man coverage, probably more zone coverage, to have eyes on him to be able to corral him if he tries to escape and hit through the rush lane. So that's how the game plan changed a little bit when he came in. But everybody did a great job in terms of all the things Coach Durkin has called. Coach Durk called a great game, and we want to give credit to him where credit is due. Like, he put us, like, a lot of guys in great positions to make plays, and it showed on Saturday.
And a couple of turnovers forced by that defense as well. I know that feels good for just the unit as a whole, right, to give the football back and be able to help your offense out a little bit, who ended up having a breakout night.
Yeah, just trying to get the ball back to them as much as possible. We talked about that. That was a key emphasis for us. We saw the statistic. We talked about statistics. We saw a statistic of the Auburn defense and the Auburn offense. That was on Twitter, and during the week, and the coaches showed us, you know, talking about how we were so close, just to try to encourage us before the game. And then Coach Durkin broke it down to us. It was like, hey guys, like, you know, these are great stats and stuff. We're holding people to less than maybe 5 yards a play, but what is the game all about? And he says, it's all about the ball. We got to go get the ball, so get it back to our offense as many times as possible. It was an emphasis during practice. Coach Durkin emphasized it. The staff emphasized it. And it's not a coincidence that it translated the way it did on Saturday.
I love that, man. Defense absolutely ate on Saturday. Auburn offense was able to, again, have a breakout performance, especially for Jarquez. We'll get to that in just a second. But Auburn beats Kentucky 24-10 as we sit down with Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante, our weekly segment of Tiger Takes, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Eugene, what is one word that you can describe what the feeling was Saturday night when the clock hits triple zeros in Auburn and you guys get your first win in the SEC this season? And what's the one word to describe the feeling you had on Saturday and why?
I'll say relief. I'll say a sense of relief. You know, for me, and being my senior year, you know, I always envisioned it going a certain way. And, you know, we had our trials and tribulations that we had to go through. And as a player, you don't ever envision those types of things. And just getting that victory, just reminded guys that who we can be, who we can truly be. And although there has been trial and tribulation, to continue to persevere, you know, hard work doesn't go unrewarded. Just everything that happened that week, you know, Coach Freeze being sick, you can clearly see that he was not feeling well. I'm a person where I analyze and I like to look into things and, you know, little details, and I just felt like Coach Freeze, his energy was low because he wasn't feeling well, you know. And as a team, you know, just to rally around our coach who supports us through thick and thin, and then just to try to go out there and play our complete game for the fans. And we haven't felt like we played any complete football games this season, and this was the game that we really did put it all on tape.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up about Coach, because, you know, those reports started coming out, you know, as the game got closer. And so for the entire team, not just the defense, Eugene, but just the team as a whole, I mean, what does that show to you guys? The fact that Coach was down and out, apparently, and caught a private flight, came all the way to Lexington, and still coached a game, coached you to a win where he was definitely not 100%.
Yeah, it means a lot. It just talks about his resilience as a coach. Talks about our resilience to battle through adversity as a unit, and just to rally around somebody that powerful in that position like that. Just to lean on him in his times of trial. You know, you could tell he was clearly sick. It was hard for him to even get out words, and I just think that belief and that belief system can move mountains, you know, and I just felt like that's what it was on game day. Just seeing Coach going down and out, being down, it was just like, hey, we gotta pick ourselves up because Coach is not doing well, and we want to get this win for him.
Auburn gets the win over Kentucky over the weekend. You get to come back home for the first time in a long time, Eugene, as Auburn playing inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Vanderbilt comes to town, and I don't have to tell you who that quarterback is. He's extremely talented now, and you guys saw him a year ago, and Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt coming back to Jordan-Hare Stadium. What can you take away from last year and what this team saw from him and what you're seeing this year with him at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, Diego's certainly a special quarterback. We've seen that last year. He's certainly somebody super, super dynamic with his legs. He's a great runner, a great thrower. It conducts that offense very well for them. They have a lot of skill pieces that are really good, too. They got a great receiving core, who I feel like is a very underrated receiver core in the SEC. They do a lot of great things on the outside and making plays and contested catches and stuff like that. And I got good speed to stretch the team, stretch us vertically. So it's a challenge for our guys, and they're certainly embracing that challenge. They got great running back, number 28, who's a downhill type runner. And that's on me. That's on our front seven to neutralize him. And it's going to be a great challenge going against a guy that has that balance of power and speed. And just, you know, their whole offense, they have a great tight end who came over from New Mexico State. Certainly somebody that's a dynamic pass catcher for them. Makes a lot of plays on the ball, goes up and gets it, high points it. It's a big target, you know, so another matchup with me. Any time I'm on them, just being able to close the space, play through the hands and make plays on the ball. Those are all their key points, all key players in their offense. And, you know, we're doing our best to prepare and get ready for them.
And that's a team that was top 25 a week ago. Basically, any team they've played here recently, Eugene, they've hung around the entire time, and the defense has played really solid. That offense is extremely dangerous. What does it mean for you guys getting to come back home inside of Jordan-Hare, a place you haven't played in over a month?
It's a great thing. Just being able to come home. I know it's been about a month since we've been home, so just having that feeling of playing at home again. The electric environment, which is Jordan-Hare Stadium, just embracing that, you know, embracing defending our home turf. And, you know, Coach Freed said that he wants us to do a better job of protecting our home turf. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're trying to hone in on this week. Defensively, offensively, special teams-wise, we're going to go out there and defend Jordan-Hare Stadium.
Vanderbilt coming to town, taking on Auburn inside of Jordan-Hare. Want to look at the rest of the schedule really quick before we let you go, because now that you've got that win, everybody's talking about whether, you know, this team is about to make that turn and hit this backstretch, this home stretch, if you will, of the regular season. Vanderbilt, La Monroe, Texas A&M, and Alabama. There is a bye week coming up next week. I'm sure you guys are looking forward to that as well. What is the mindset going into these final few games to where you can honestly built some momentum in the back half?
Yeah, we understand that these games right here are very crucial. I think this stretch of the season is the most crucial part of the season. Just building momentum, not just for now, but for the future. We know we got young guys that are, you know, big into this program and are going to be key parts of this program for the future. So just getting them the confidence of playing good football, understanding, following the leadership of the guys that are older than them, just steering this program in the right direction. That's been my biggest objective since, you know, the transgressions of this season. Laying a foundation for the young guys ahead behind me, so that one day I come back to this program, and I'll see that, you know, I felt like I laid the groundwork for the success that is to come.
Auburn football linebacker Eugene Asante. He's with us every single week here on ESPN 106.7. It's a part of Tiger Takes, which is brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. Make your next reservation online at 12ksalon.net. Eugene, thanks so much for your time, man. War Eagle.
War Eagle, thank you.
Tiger Takes once again every Wednesday here on The Drive, and sponsored by 12K Salon. You can book your next appointment by calling 334-209-2900. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Since 1997, River City Door has helped